You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week on the show, we blast off to talk about Damien Chazelle's First Man, his new biopic of Neil Armstrong's journey to the moon, which puts the emphasis on Armstrong himself. For this episode, we are thrilled to have back Seeing and Believing's Wade Bearden and Chasing Atlantis's Matthew Simone. In this episode, we talk about what drives us to do great things and whether or not it's worth it in the end. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are so thrilled to be back this week talking about First Man, Damien Chazelle's biopic of Neil Armstrong and the legendary space mission that led him to become the first man to walk on the moon. This week, we are so glad to have back a couple of returnees, Wade Bearden, co-host of Seeing and Believing. Welcome back, Wade.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me on, Steve. It's been a few minutes since I have graced the podcast.
Oh man, I almost said not long enough, but no, that's not complimentary at all. We're so glad to have you back, Wade. Honestly, it's so great to chat again. And producer of the upcoming documentary Chasing Atlantis, Matthew Simone. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
It is very appropriate to have you on as well. As we talk about First Man tells a story that we have seen and heard many times before, especially given that it was televised back in the 60s. We've seen the footage. But rather than just tell you the story of how they got there, Chazelle chooses to focus the story on Neil Armstrong himself and his personal journey and the dangers that were actually associated with the first moon landing. A reminder to you all that this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but let's jump in. Guys, what did you think of First Man?
Well, I was really looking forward to this film. On my list of most anticipated movies of the fall, this was number one. I'm a pretty big fan of Chazelle. I really enjoyed Whiplash. It made my top 10 the year that it came out. Mm. La La Land was actually my favorite movie of that year. It's just a really great picture that I can watch over and over again. And both of those films are concerned with ambition and accomplishment and what it takes to achieve greatness. So obviously, this is a really good story to work through those issues with. And what I appreciated about First Man is that this is centered on Armstrong's character, and everything is told through that prism. And Chazelle is able to tackle the ideas of accomplishment and ambition and what the pursuit of greatness does to a person, but also to a family. And so I was very surprised at that angle, but also excited to see him work his usual themes in a way that's different than we've seen him do it before. And so I really did like this film. I like it a lot. It's a very good, one of the best of the year, I think, in my opinion.
I wasn't looking forward to it at all. Which seems strange as someone who's a space fan, but you know what? I had this kind of revelation, and I got to credit a friend of mine I was watching Hidden Figures with. And they said, you got to watch Hidden Figures, because I hadn't seen it yet, said it was on Netflix. And so we went through it and watched it, and it was a beautiful story. And then together I said, well, have you seen Apollo 13 yet? And they said, no. So we went and watched Apollo 13. And about halfway through it, they were like, you know, this movie's really boring in comparison to Hidden Figures. And I was like, why is that? You have this action and adventure, and you think, you know, blowing up and things are on the line. They're like, yeah, but I don't know anything really about these people. It's just like, it's just a room full of generic white eggheads all trying to put people on the moon. And while there's like this struggle that's physical in nature, you know, you might be running out of oxygen or blowing up or something. You have these three women that behind the scenes, you know, have so very little control over the lives and access to the space program. And some of their scenes are even more tense than, say, you know, Apollo 13 trying to get into orbit around the moon. And so I was like, yeah, wow, that kind of really changed things for me. And I've been really critical lately of thoughts around exploration in terms of a lot of it just being flag planting. You know, we have to go to places and plant flags. And all of a sudden I heard a criticism coming up about First Man that Buzz Aldrin had actually posted online, and is that the flag planting scene is not in the movie. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder then if it's going to take a different line. It's not going to be about, like, you know, the flag plant and the footprint and like the bombastic sort of, you know, conquering nature of going to the moon, but it's going to be more of a personal journey story. It's going to be more of that behind the scenes, like telling the story about the person and not just the achievement. And it was. And so I was actually delightfully surprised by the film. It did a lot better job than I thought it was going to.
I love both of what you guys are saying because, Wade, just like you, I love Chazelle's work. No pun intended with his previous stuff, but there's something lyrical about the way that he can construct a scene, which gives it an intensity that you don't always see in some films. There's something about the way he constructs and builds a scene, which is just almost visceral at times when he wants to be. You know, I felt that in Whiplash. I felt that in moments in this film. But he can also sort of balance that with a relationship drama, as he showed sort of in La La Land and pulls out here. And the tensions, and in this film, I think he pulls both of those things together and holds them up against one another, sort of juxtaposes the tension in between these two things. It's just incredible.
Yeah. I was kind of saying, like, how could you tell the story any differently than it's already been told? Like, how is this just not like an updated version of, you know, Apollo 13 or Right Stuff or whatever?
Exactly.
But it was good. It actually went a little bit more into the background. Like, the friend of mine that I was watching Apollo 13 with, we got to the point in the film where she was like, I don't really care if they burn up in the atmosphere because I don't know anything about these people.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's fair. It doesn't tell you who they are. Like, you don't really have a vested interest in their success over the fact that they're just other human beings and you want them to live. Whereas, you know, with Hidden Figures, it's a totally different kind of space movie. It's talking about the hardship of these people to get into the program, to be recognized as black women that are working behind the scenes. And in this case with Armstrong, you know, it's certainly there are challenges as a test pilot. But they go into like a little bit more of his story, you know, his humanity, and they show him like who is. That's why the movie's not about the landing. It's about the first man. Like, it's literally about him. It's his movie.
Yeah, that was.
Well, I'd have to dispute your friend about Apollo 13 because I think it's a great film, but there is this different focus in Apollo 13, and Tom Hanks's character is more so enamored with exploration and with achieving that walk on the moon and that transcendence, and we get a little bit of that here, and it is about achievement, but there's this different angle. So it's not exploration for the sake of exploration for Gosling's character. It's ambition born out of tragedy or grief. And that seems to be that grief, you know, his young daughter passes away early in the film. That grief seems to compel him to seek for something more, that compels him into his work to be the best or the greatest or to be the first man. And that is a unique angle because we have all of this politics that's happening around Armstrong's character. The Soviets versus the Americans, you have astronauts that are jockeying for position, and he's a character with his head down attempting to process grief by achieving something big. And that to me is this, it is a profound angle. And I like where the film goes with him on the moon and him coming to grips with his daughter's death and seeking and finding that big transcendent moment and then coming down, and there's this ambiguous ending. If you know anything about Armstrong, you know him and his wife. Later they get divorced, and we see the seeds of that there. We see this, you know, glass window, this separation between the two. So Chazelle is concerned with what does achievement bring us? And if we're, even if we're looking at it from this sort of spiritual angle, this transcendence in that experience dissipates after a while. That transcendence that we get in accomplishment doesn't always stay, and we're left with the hurdles that we've jumped in order to achieve it. So there's so much kind of going on in the background, and the reason that that can happen is because we're focused on Armstrong's character. And that's not even to say anything about the technical qualities that helps us to kind of see the film through his eyes.
See, I disagree. First of all, I don't think that Tom Hanks in Apollo 13 cares about exploration at all. I find it really difficult to relate to his character and the moment of sadness that he has around the moon where he's like, I can't land on the moon. And I'm like, dude, you're literally in a spaceship 3 days away from Earth. It's really difficult to be sad for you right now when you're in space. So, yeah, I mean, he didn't get to that last little part to land on the moon, but that's – he's focusing so much more on the loss. And I think that's what happens as well with Armstrong. I don't know if it's hard to say that it's an achievement or that it's greatness. I think he was just running away from pain. And Yeager makes that point right at the beginning. He's like, he's distracted. And the whole point of the movie, I think, is he's trying to like hide himself away inside of his skills, away from the distraction of what it is. And I don't know if it's possible to then explore or be an explorer when you've cut yourself off so much from your humanity. I think he was running away, and he wanted to run away so far that he wanted to run to the farthest place he possibly could.
See, that's one of the things I liked about the film. And I have to say that I'm fascinated by the fact that the greatest disagreement we have so far in this podcast is our views on Apollo 13.
right.
But that's one of the things I really liked about this film, is that we don't fully understand his motivation. You know, the truth is, we know that his pain has informed what he's doing. But it's hard to dispute or even confirm either of what you guys are saying. You know, is he just in denial and he's trying to do the great thing to block out the pain? Or is it some form of release? You know, we see him on the moon, of course, releasing the personal item. He has brought it with him to the surface of the earth, or to the surface of the moon, and now symbolically is letting it go. And we see this sort of moment where he's allowed himself the freedom to move beyond that moment. And grief does that. Loss of a child, it does that. He may not even know in this film which one it is, whether he's running away or whether he's trying to work through, because he doesn't talk about it very much. You know, he's walking with his friend. He's walking with Jason Clarke's character, and all of a sudden he speaks about his daughter. I think it's on a swing set. And he's like, what's happening right now? Jason Clarke's just sort of astounded that he's actually starting to verbalize something that he has never spoken before. But I think that there's a tension between whether or not it is driving him or driving him away. And that's one of the things I think is most interesting about this film.
It's really kind of fascinating too how Chazelle utilizes the idea of vision or seeing as he's searching for something. And so that great scene at the very beginning of the movie where he's jumped up through the atmosphere, and across his helmet is reflected the earth. And it's right across his eyesight. And we get a couple of different shots like that with Gosling's character, as if he's pursuing something, or he's seeing something, he's after something. And then when he's first interviewed at NASA, He talks about going into space will allow us to, he says, allow us to see things. So there's definitely this pursuit that's happening. He's longing for something, for some sort of transcendence, for some sort of comfort in the midst of his pain, driving himself into work in order to achieve something. Now, what is that? A part of that, I think it is, like I mentioned, kind of the ambition. Part of that is the maybe the peace that comes with doing something great in the midst of pain. I wish I would have seen this in IMAX. I didn't have a chance to see it. I'd be interested in seeing what you thought about it if any of you've seen it in IMAX. But when we get to the moon, it's really fascinating how Chazelle films the landscapes, and he makes barren landscape look wondrous. And it's really kind of fascinating how he does that. And there seems to be this idea that, hey, he's gotten to where he needs to be. Now, when we leave that, everything kind of fades and the world succumbs back to the politics that sent him up. And he still feels that distance between his wife. But Chazelle kind of really uses visual imagery here to connect where he's going, what he's trying to do, what he's trying to achieve. And I think that's what adds not just to the narrative quality, but also kind of to the technical quality of this movie.
I think you're right. I think it's just stunning how the visuals of it just look. They're so beautiful to be on that space, or they're treated with such reverence, and it feels very personal. Now, I also want to go back a little bit, though, something that Matt mentioned earlier, in what may be the silliest controversy I've ever heard, is the idea of the American flag not being prominent. I was wondering what your thoughts were on this particular issue and why it was important to not have it in this film.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not American, so I mean, to me, I was like, I don't care. But I don't think exploration is really about flag planting. I don't think that's what it's supposed to be. And this is one of the things I was thinking about in the film is that I think if we're in tune with ourselves and we're in a healthy place of mind, I think exploration is supposed to be a way to connect. It's supposed to be about connection. It's supposed to be about connection to nature and connection to humanity and one another. I think it's kind of an irony that the most replicated photo from space is not during the Apollo mission is not of the moon. It's of Earth. It's looking back and looking at humanity and what we are. But flag planting, I think it's a lot more about conquest. And I know people debate me is depending on what you see the flag as representing, but it's not a flag of the planet. It's a flag of one nation. But ultimately, I don't think that's what the theme of the story. I think if they had had that scene in the film, it would have really been jarring. I think it would have really stood out from the rest of the theme of the film because that it takes you out of the story. That much more is a story about the rest of the nation and everything else. And there was a little bit of that in there, but I think they were much more trying to show that it was an achievement of the world. At the same time, they were showing interviews from people from all over the world and toward the end of the film, and I think that one part would have kind of stood out awkwardly.
Yeah, I think it's all kind of silly, and I think too, you know, this is behind the scenes. This is told from Armstrong's perspective, and we get his story. And so the film obviously focuses on moments that the public is not going to see. Now, obviously, we're going to get the big moon landing because you have to if you make this movie. But I don't think that was anything that took away from the film. And I know other people have talked about, you know, what about the spiritual elements? A Buzz took communion. Why wasn't that there? And that might have added an interesting dynamic. But at the same time, too, that's not Armstrong as a person. He didn't partake in that. So all of the film kind of focuses on him, and you can kind of bleed that over to almost every aspect of the movie. When Armstrong is being launched into space with his crew, we don't get a lot of outside shots. We're in this rickety tin can with him. Mm. We get a number of POV shots, and it adds to the tenseness of the film. It adds to the claustrophobia of the film. And at the same time, we feel like we're in his shoes. That's what the movie wants to do. And Chazelle really excels in the technical qualities throughout this movie. But if you kind of really just break it down and you look at it, everything is from the perspective of Armstrong. And if it's not, it's a slight variant. So I think it's kind of a weird controversy. And we still get a picture of the flag.
Yeah.
In the moon. It's just we don't get to see it planted. I honestly think, too, if nobody would have written about it, that first screening, whenever it was written about, I don't know if anybody would have even noticed it, or it would have even become a big deal.
Well, that's the thing to me. This one bothered me, not because it was an issue for me, but it bothered me that it was an issue for anybody. Because this particular film is actually, like you said, it's an intimate portrayal of one person's perspective. So with him particularly on the moon, that wasn't him that planted this flag. It wasn't his story. He was there, going back to Apollo 13. It's about the mission of Apollo 13. This film is called First Man. And the funny thing is, as he goes out, as they land, they're even talking to him, have you thought about what you're going to say yet? You know, we all know what it's going to be because it's one of the most famous quotes in modern history. But you get this impression of you have this real person who's having this experience. And even though it's viewed as a global victory in this particular film and as a victory for humankind, I've heard it said so much that, you know, it's really for him, it's more about the one small step. It's unfortunate because it became bigger than it needed to be. I do understand why Buzz Aldrin might not have liked the film, because you don't really like Buzz Aldrin in particular.
No, they don't portray him very well in the film.
You know, I was doing some research, and the only thing I could find from him about the movie, he did visit the set, and he talked to Corey Stahl a couple times. I think he even said something about his bald head. It was kind of a funny interaction, but there was a tweet from him when the controversy started about, you know, like hashtag proud to be American, something like that. And then the picture of the flag. So he kind of weighed in on it, but he didn't actually say anything. But I really like Stahl's performance here. Yeah. I think he captures his personality in just a few short scenes. And at the same time, though, he listens to Armstrong. He chills out when Gosling's character tells him to stop. And so there is kind of a likability to him, if that makes sense. I don't know if any of y'all felt the same way.
Well, I just think there's sort of a likability to Corey Stoll. I'd never heard the story about him taking communion, actually. I had no idea that he did that.
I believe he was maybe an elder or a deacon at a church in Houston. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting tidbit that I learned just in the process of learning about this film.
That's really interesting. What did you both think of his relationship with Jan? One of the things that I found particularly appealing in this film was her character and the portrayal of their relationship. Could you talk about – I don't know whether you felt the same way, but – what did you think of the way the tension that was brought into the family?
I appreciated the family scenes. I think those were they were really great, and the case could be made that those were some of the best in the film. They felt down to earth. You know, Chazelle uses a handheld camera to not only make us feel like we're in that era, but also to make those scenes feel earthier, as he does, you know, throughout the film. I think Claire Foy is great. And there's a scene, I mentioned it when we were viewing on Seeing and Believing. There's a scene, and it's one of the most emotional scenes in the movie for me. But it's when he is, he's going to take off, he's going to, you know, go into outer space, and he's telling his kids he's going to the moon. It's possible he might not be back. And it's when they ask him, how long are you going to be gone? and he says how long he's going to be gone. And his son says, so you're going to miss my swim meet. And it was emotional because Armstrong is this man who's kind of caught up in a number of different things. He's caught up in NASA, which is caught up in the Soviet-American rivalry. He's dealing with his own demons. He is working through his own issues, his own ambitions. And he's going to be the first person to step foot on the moon. And yet his children just want his presence. Mm. And his wife is trying to work through that. You know, throughout the film, his kids are like, Daddy, will you play with me? Will you play with me? And he's distant. He might be present, but he's also distant. And those scenes were just very emotional for me. And maybe it's just because of where I'm at as a parent. And my son says that to me all the time, Daddy, will you play with me? Daddy, will you play with me? And I think Chazelle, what he's doing, he's complicating the idea of accomplishment and like he explored in Whiplash, and what does it mean to do something big and at what cost? And does this cost him time with his children? Is it worth it? And I think in every one of the films that Chazelle's made, he's questioned, is accomplishment worth it in terms of the relationships that we give up or the time that we give up with the people we care about? And so I think he did a fine job of kind of tracking that here, but I'm really interested in hearing y'all's thoughts as well.
Mm. There's one scene that really stood out is that he was he's finally about to head out, and his wife's like, you need to sit down and have a conversation with your children, especially if this is the last time you're going to be able to see them or ever see them, and you need to talk about that with them. Mm. So he sits down, and it was such an interesting parallel to the opening scene one of the opening scenes where he's being questioned by the panel about whether or not he's going to go to space or whether or not he's going to join up in the Apollo mission. And the one in the beginning scene, they ask him, the one person on the panel says, "Hey, I'm sorry about your daughter." And he asks, "Sorry, is there a question there?" He's waiting yeah. on this response. And then he's sitting down with the boys, and they're asking him questions. And finally, at the end, he says, and it's the same angle, you know, that he's sitting at the end of this table. And then he says, "Are there any questions? Do you have any more questions?" And it's interesting because it shows that his ability to kind of interact with people is they portray it throughout. It's difficult for him throughout the course of the entire film, is his personal relationships and interpersonal relationships. It's like he's always in every aspect of the film. He's always a test pilot. He's always responding to stimulus. And he's waiting for the question for him to be able to forward, conversation and dialogue. Otherwise he's just shut down. And kind of on his own. And it does show that he has this little bit of this loneliness about him that, he's kind of always in his own mind and always focused and trying to, shut out those external distractions. And I don't think he knows how to initiate with the family. He's waiting for them to come to him.
Yeah, I think that Claire Foy's work in this film is just phenomenal. Personally, I think she grounds the film emotionally in a lot of ways. Her portrayal of Janet in this film counterbalances his stoic nature and grounds it in reality. I love that you mentioned, Wade, about him being present but not really present, because that's sort of what you see in his character. You know, I was questioning the whole film whether or not it was worth it for him, not just because he could die, and they make that very, very clear. You know, on a side note, you mentioned earlier on about it being the rocket or the takeoff scenes, the launch scenes being from his perspective. I've never considered the fact that their sight lines were so tiny, just their visual, Chazelle lets you know the peril of what they're doing. But by the end of the film, the way that his children have been pushed away, the way his wife has been pushed away, and I love that scene. I'm so heartbroken by that scene where they're standing or they're sitting there with the glass between them, because it's just silent, but you know everything that's happening. You just understand. It's a very quiet scene. And the mission has been completed, but reality has not been dealt with. You know, he may have dealt with his personal issues, but there are so much damage that has been caused with the effort that he went through to accomplish this great thing. There is this question of value, and we know it's valuable because it's an amazing feat, but is it worth the cost of the loss of his family or the trauma that was happening right in front of his eyes? I don't think the film really answers that to its credit.
Well, I think there's an interesting conversation that they have about that when he crashes the lunar lander vehicle, and they're like, okay, we have to go back to simulation, or we got to do something else. And he's like, well, we got to keep going. And then he's asked, well, at what cost? And he's like, well, it's too late to ask that question now, because they've already had 3 astronauts die, a bunch of test pilots die. And I think that's his way of trying to answer that question, is that in his mind, it's worth whatever it takes at this point. And I don't know and maybe that's why he isolates himself from the family, because they're essentially asking him that question, and maybe he doesn't want to give them that answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to point out too, you were talking about Claire Foy and some of these other characters. This is a really great cast, a great surrounding cast.
Yep.
Kyle Chandler, of course, is really great being Kyle Chandler. and then two, Jason Clarke plays Ed White. And I think he just does a fantastic job with what he's given. And I know a little bit about Apollo, but not a ton. And I was thinking to myself, I think he was in Apollo 1 when the fire went off. And I'm hoping I'm wrong. And then he tells them, I'm going to be a part of Apollo 1. And just the emotion of that alone, that you don't really know who's going to make it, even during tests, and the fear that is involved in just being the first to do anything. And I thought all of the surrounding characters, surrounding actors, were fantastic across the board. You mentioned you were talking about sight lines, Steve, and you were talking about just the vision in space and how claustrophobic it is. It's fascinating how Chazelle will film space, and it will be, it seems like the scariest place you can imagine, being up there alone in a spin. And then there are other moments when we have this symphony music, and it seems like this wondrous paradise, something that does beg for invoke something more, something greater. So it really is kind of neat how Chazelle will contrast the beauty and the wonder of space, but also the terror of space.
I thought it was interesting. Chazelle can't resist having music, not music in the film, but music become a theme. There seemed to be this aspect to Armstrong where this classical music, it not only calms him down, but it sort of focuses him. And there's a beauty to it, which I think works particularly well in the film. It is interesting that in a film about the 60s, you get very little actual pop music from the 60s, which is what we associate.
No CCR, which is great. Yeah. I love CCR, but we don't need any more of that.
That's right.
I was thinking about that when I was watching the film, and I think that was another distinct effort to try to make it feel and be different than just another Apollo 13 type movie, which the soundtrack for that movie is amazing. And it's filled with music from the 60s, 70s. One of the things I was thinking about the score is that it's not, I like the fact that the movie wasn't overscored. And there's several scenes where I was thinking more in terms of the sound effects were absolutely terrifying. Because when you're in those when you're in those launch sequences, or when the Gemini ship's out of control and in a spin, there's no music behind those. Where normally you'd have, like Apollo 13, you'd have sort of that adventure music and the orchestra and everything that was performing, and you just have the rattling of the ship and the spinning and them being pressed into their seats from the centripetal force and I think because, in a movie like Apollo 13, where it takes place where they at this point, and they mentioned that, like, this is already routine for them. So they're excited. They're celebrities at this point. They're expected to be on television. Whereas this is the first. They're still carving the way. They don't know if this thing's going to explode when they get up there. They don't know if the docking procedure is going to work. And it was terrifying. And those scenes were, I never really thought of space exploration depicted in that way, like in terms of real actual travel, historic documentation, or trying to show that from a historical fiction point of view. They made it so scary in those scenes. And I like the fact that they held back on the soundtrack that way.
Well,
And the sound design's incredible. Like, I don't know how it won't at the very least be nominated for a ton of awards just because of sound mixing and sound design.
Mm-hmm. Well, you realize that they basically threw Noah's Ark into a sound machine for the launch sequences. they were at the film festival at TIFF when I saw it, and they talked about how they literally had just about every animal that you can imagine thrown into the mix. I think hippos were included, and Gosling just rolled his eyes and he was like, yeah, wow, man, this is your thing. And he was like, because apparently they just kept throwing more and more animals because they wanted this to be terrifying. You know, you talk about the balance between space being something that's horrifying but also beautiful. This is also a film that space is not just terrifying because it's unknown. It's terrifying because it's enormous. Somehow he makes it enormous and uncontrollable and yet claustrophobic at the same time, if that's possible. You know, Janet says, you're a bunch of guys making models out of balsa wood. You don't have anything under control. So everything is a variable. But when you're in space, it just, when the scenes when he's in space, it just feels like he's in this tiny room and there's nowhere to go. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and Wade, I nodded when you said claustrophobic for the first time, because that was the one thing that was going through my mind, especially when we're in that spin sequence. I was like, oh my God, I was on the edge of my seat. That's like such an uncomfortable moment. You're like, oh my goodness, stop spinning.
Mm-hmm. And I could see how someone could get sick even watching that
on the screen.
And just the feeling that it invokes. I think it's a risk when you do that, because you have an opportunity to alienate individuals, but it really paid off. I did have a question. So I really do love the movie. I think it's great. I have heard some people say that they thought it was a little too slow. Maybe they were looking for some bigger bangs. Maybe they wanted more focus on the actual space or moon, the space or moon sequences. How did y'all feel about that? Because I thought the pacing was great, especially for the human story that it told. But I was interested in hearing your thoughts.
Yeah, you know what? I thought the pacing of the movie kind of fell apart a little bit after the Apollo mission launched. I think it was because we knew that part of the story, and they weren't sure exactly what they needed to start doing with it. And so it was kind of just like, at that point, they're jumping days, jumping scenes, because they're like, okay, we got to get to this landing sequence and get onto the surface of the moon. And I felt the pacing at that part of the movie was completely different than the rest, and it stood out a little bit. Once they got on the moon and they had those few sequences with him, I'm interested to know whether or not he actually did drop a bracelet, his daughter's bracelet, off on the moon, or if that was sort of a piece of creative freedom that was taken with the story writing. But otherwise, I felt the rest of it was fine. I saw some of those statements too about the movie being a bit slow or a bit boring, and I was like, how could anyone, after that spin sequence, or how could anyone feel that this movie is intense? I was like, oh my goodness. And the opening sequence where he's taking the jet up into the upper atmosphere, it was such an incredible opening to the film. I loved it.
Yeah, no, it is. And I was thinking through, you know, did he leave that bracelet? And I haven't done the research. And part of me wonders is, you know, if he would have done that, would he have told anyone? I'm not sure that he would have.
Yeah.
But, you know, they definitely put an emphasis in the film in that one scene about things that are carried to the moon and then brought back. And, you know, Buzz Aldrin's wife's jewelry. It was definitely interesting to me in that he wanted to bring something to the moon, but not bring it back. Mm. And I think too, that also goes into like the idea of grief or pain, as well, that he's experiencing.
I never thought of it, but I love that, that he brought something there to not bring back. I'm just like thinking about that. That's really well said. I didn't feel the pacing was slow, and I thought the drama scenes or the family scenes were actually a highlight for me of the film. I would say I think there's an argument for it to being jarring in its pacing. And I think the fault of that is not the fault of this film. I think the fault of that is the film Gravity. Because I found a lot of comparisons between this and Gravity thematically. But Gravity doesn't have the personal side on the ground. Gravity is like the spin sequence for 90 minutes. So if you went there expecting a film like Gravity, you weren't going to get it. And it could feel jarring in that way. I thought it was really well done. I didn't have an issue with it. And I loved the scenes on Earth almost more than the actual launch sequences in a lot of ways. Because I love that sort of relationship tension and banter that was going on between them. That would be something that I could see being an issue for the casual person.
It's something we haven't really touched on, which I thought was interesting too. And I like how the film kind of skirted around it. And we'd see this theme or idea kind of poke in and then poke out. It's the resources that were designated to go to the moon. Hmm. And there's this question, well, is it worth it? Is it worth it to put that much money into a program that for some people was just an accomplishment? Now, we know now that NASA has developed so much technology that we use every single day as a result of the money that it was given. So we can reasonably say that it was worth it now. But at that time period, was it worth it? Especially because of Vietnam escalating and because of race relations. What in poverty, what could that money have gone to? And I appreciate how Chazelle, he gives that topic the time of day without ever fully trying to answer the question. He kind of leaves it with us. And that's a part of the politicizing that we see in the movie and what we're left with as well. And I think the film does a really good job of kind of introducing those topics, letting us wrestle with them, but never straying from the focus of Armstrong himself.
One of the things that Chazelle does is present this as something that unifies all people or sought to unify all people. But there is that interesting question of resource allotment. Literally, the 60s are held up as one of the greatest periods of turmoil and of social change. The way that he handles it is not something that minimizes the importance of that question in any way. At the same time, he does see value in the accomplishment itself, and I think he is hoping that it provides a light in the midst of a time which is in the midst of such social upheaval. Mm. One more thing, just guys, as we start to wrap up here, I read a quote in Variety, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it. When they're talking about the film, this is what they had to say. What finally gets to you about the movie and makes it a haunting experience is that the quivery peril of being aboard a rocket ship incarnates something indelible about what the space program was about. Not just a new frontier, but a culture's way of defying death. I was wondering if you think that that's accurate or even what you think he means.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thought. If you think about where this event took place in history, as baby boomers are getting older during the sexual revolution, there are things that are changing in the world. Technology is just starting to explode. And we see in the 60s and in the 70s, humanity sort of, I wouldn't say growing up or even progressing, but we see new challenges. We see new ideas. We saw, the invention of the atomic bomb decades earlier. So there definitely is this angle of technology in man and the pursuit of that. The idea of escaping death is a fascinating one. So I think there is an interesting angle in terms of where this event happens in history and how it could easily be interpreted by some of those who are observing where we were with technology and kind of where we are today.
Yeah, I think that's a miss. Because I don't think the movie is about him being afraid of death. I think it's about him trying to deal with his fears of life.
Hmm.
And if you look at the film, like even all the times that there are deaths, all the deaths happen off camera. The closest you see it is you see the flashpoint that happens in the Apollo 1 capsule, but then it cuts away. The daughter, you don't see her. There's no like death scene. You don't see her die. She's just, you know, there's just sequence with her being buried. The crash that happens with the one pilot, it happens off camera. They talk about it later. So while that's a specter in the background, I don't think that's really the point of what the film's trying to show. I think it's him being afraid of life. Almost, basically, especially in dealing with grief, which I think is a poignant word that really describes what he's going through. The way it had said, it's really him dealing with his grief, and that's what he's trying to leave on the moon. I think when he leaves that bracelet there, he's trying to leave that grief on the moon. He's trying to bury it somewhere far, far away, and it maybe in a way run away from what's going on in the rest of his life. And I think that in a way, I think they're showing that that's become a permanent shift by the time he gets back. I didn't know that the two of them end up divorced later, but that certainly makes sense given that last scene where they kind of have the Captain Kirk Spock sequence there with the glass.
You know, it is interesting. Clint Eastwood was attached to the project for a while. And, you know, I appreciate Eastwood's work because he always has this mixed sort of relationship with patriotism. Hmm. And, you know, you watch a film and you think, okay, could he be this sort of right-wing pro-war individual? But you kind of dig deeper, and he's certainly more complicated than that. You will watch something like Flags of Our Fathers or Letters from Iwo Jima, and when you get to the end scene, it is pretty ambiguous, and it does kind of feel Clint Eastwoodian in the sense that you're dealing with patriotism and people celebrating this victory for America. What exactly does that mean on the world stage? So kind of a fascinating angle to kind of look at the film. And I'm glad he ultimately didn't direct it because I think Chazelle did an amazing job. But it does make you wonder what it would have looked like if he would have gone through with the project.
His first words out of the shuttle might have been, "Go ahead, make my day."
You know, technically, I don't think it would have been as polished. You know, Eastwood is very this workmanlike quality to him. But yeah.
Instead, they gave it a great American moment. They put it in the hands of two Canadians. And see, that's where they went wrong.
We're in a podcast with two Canadians.
That's it. That's it.
Oh man.
That's where they went wrong, Wade. That was it right there. It was doomed from the start.
Did Justin Bieber sing on the Trek soundtrack? Because that would have really made it work.
I think it's more of a Celine Dion moment, actually.
So. She was too busy making the Deadpool soundtrack, actually, so they couldn't get Celine. Guys, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate the chance to talk with you both, but let's screen it or skip it. First man, screen it or skip it.
Well, I think everybody probably knows where I'm at. I would say, you know, screen it, and if possible, see it on the big screen. You definitely want to do that. I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't see it in IMAX because I really wanted to see some of those moon scenes in IMAX. But yeah, definitely screen it.
Yeah, I'd go screen it. And I agree with Wade. If you have a chance to see it on big screen, especially right at that opening sequence, I was like, wow. Mm. That's what an amazing hook into the film, and that would have been amazing on a bigger screen.
Yeah, it's a screen it for me. I say watch it on your phone. No, I'm kidding. No, I agree. It's a beautiful film. It's a complex film in a lot of ways. I mean, I really am intrigued by the way that they portray him, and I think that it's really beautifully done, and I recommend it highly. I think it's well worth your time and money. It's nice to see a film like this, which can have moments that are spectacular and moments that are small at the same time. As it's doesn't always happen. So
yeah,
Well, guys, thank you so much for being on. I know you both have a couple of exciting projects on the go. How can people get in touch with you and follow those things?
So you mentioned my podcast, Seeing and Believing. It's a weekly podcast. It's actually a spoiler-free. So we do some shorter reviews, about 15 to 20 minutes every single week. So I'm really excited about that. And then, Steve, I got to say thank you for coming on a couple weeks ago. I was out of town, but you showed up and you were a guest. And so it was great to listen to the podcast for once as an outsider. And so listeners can check that out, Seeing and Believing. And then just for my stuff, whether you want to read some of my articles or check out my book, you can just go to wadebearden.com.
Great. And thanks so much. I had a blast with Kevin on as well. So I appreciated that. Thanks so much, Wade. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, we've been working on a documentary called Chasing Atlantis that was inspired by the final shuttle launch, the launch of Shuttle Atlantis in July 2011. We thought it would be a short road trip film, but it turned out that we had more in store for us. So it started off, our first big interview was with Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield, and we had just shortly before the shuttle itself launched. And then it became this ongoing project. So we're hoping to have it released next year if people are interested in the film, which has become less about the shuttle and more just about how we connect with a sense of wonder in our lives. It doesn't matter. It could be space. It could be something else. But how do we become explorers through our connection to one another in the world? And you can check us out on chasingatlantis.com.
Great. It sounds like a great project. I'm excited. I can't wait to see it when it comes out. And for you at home, of course, you can follow us and find us wherever you get your podcasts, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any number of other places. It would be great. If you go to the website, screenfish.net, and go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which is some small group questions which can help frame the conversation for you if you do see the film or with people that you've seen it with. Guys, thanks so much again for coming on. It's just a real pleasure to chat with you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, I appreciate it. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.